20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Hope your holiday is treating you well. Hope you are safe, happy, and healthy. And from us here at the Pack-A-Day Podcast to all of you, again, hope you are having a wonderful and joyous holiday season, including today on Christmas. Appreciate you guys all so much. It is a joy for me to get to do this. Today, we're going to be going over Packers Bears grades, which is probably not the Christmas present that you wanted to open today, but we're going to get into it. There is some really fun stuff to diagnose from the film breakdown. There was an offensive lineman in this game who I thought had one of the best games of his career and maybe the best that an offensive lineman's played for Green Bay all season long. There was a defensive player in this game who had one of the lowest grades of maybe their career and this season so far for Green Bay as well. So we'll get to both sides of those things. Before we jump into any of that, let's get through the injury report first. We have our, our second injury report for the week as we get closer and closer to Saturday Night Football, Packers and Ravens, of course. Let's start with Baltimore. Really, there's just one thing that you need to know here. That's that Lamar Jackson did not practice for a second consecutive day. Now, for any of you who have been following Lamar Jackson this year, he's had a lot of missed practices and he ends up playing in the game. Usually, though, it's one missed practice per week. This would be two missed practices. Now, the first day was a walkthrough, et cetera, but this is two practices. We'll know or we'll have a better idea on Thursday if Lamar practices on Thursday. If he doesn't, that would be a potential sign that he doesn't play on Saturday. It's not a guarantee. Lamar has banked enough reps in this league and is obviously an MVP, et cetera, that even if he doesn't practice, he's more than capable of going out there and playing. Also, for those of you who've been paying attention, Lamar has not been Lamar this year at all. Injuries and I think he hasn't seemed like himself, but injuries have obviously played a major factor in that. But I'm very curious, as we've talked about, Green Bay probably gets a little bit unlucky here in the fact that if this was a Sunday game, it's probably a 3:25 game. And if that's the case, the Steelers and the Browns would have played ahead of time. And if the Steelers beat the Browns, the Ravens are eliminated. And if the Ravens are eliminated, are you risking Lamar Jackson? Are you putting him out there? You're probably not, right? But the Ravens do have some playoff equity left when they play this game on Saturday night. They won't be eliminated yet. So Baltimore may, try to do everything in their power to keep those playoff odds alive, as slim as they might be. Maybe Baltimore sees the writing on the wall, but that's a tough thing to do when you're not eliminated yet. So we'll see what this brings. But Lamar is really the only one that you need to kind of keep an eye on from a Ravens standpoint. Jadon Awuzie and Andrew Voorhees also did not practice, or sorry, they did practice but were limited. Those are the other two that are on the injury report for them. There's a couple other full participants, but again, to make things simple, just keep an eye on Lamar through the remainder of this week. For the Packers, four did not practice. Bo Melton and Malik Willis, both with illness. So they were not at practice, but it was due to illness. Malik Willis, of course, is still fighting the shoulder, and he was listed on the injury report as shoulder and illness, but it was reported at practice on Wednesday that it was the illness that actually was keeping him out, not the shoulder. Zach Tom and Christian Welch continue to not practice as well. We'll see what that means for Welch. I'm leaning towards, and we'll see what Thursday brings for practice for Zach Tom, but it could maybe be one more week for Zach Tom. The good news is Jordan Morgan filled in pretty darn well a week ago. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But I would say as of now, as far as the did not participates go, Zach Tom is the big one to keep an eye on there. Limited were Aaron Banks, Quinn Bohanna, Josh Jacobs, Jordan Love, Sean Ryan, Jordan Riley, Josh Wiley, Evan Williams, and John Williams. So Jordan Riley, Josh Wiley, Evan Williams, John Williams. Jordan, of course, is the huge one to keep an eye on here. He just has to pass concussion protocol. It's as simple as that. He's practicing for the second consecutive day, which is good. That's a great sign, but he has to pass protocol. If he does, that's a good sign. If not, then obviously he can't play. That's the biggest one to keep an eye on here. We'll talk about, let's just talk about it now. Sean Ryan, I posted a clip on Twitter. He's limited with a knee injury. There's a play in that game where Rashid Walker is going for a double team on a player that Aaron Banks is already blocking. But instead of blocking the player that Aaron Banks is already blocking, he shoves Aaron Banks. Aaron Banks goes colliding into Sean Ryan. Sean Ryan's engaged the other way, and Aaron Banks just rolls up right on Sean Ryan's knee. And these are the ones that you see in replay and you're like, oh, yep, he's done for the year. I mean, it looks brutal. It looks brutal. Just getting, he's engaged. He gets rolled up on behind, and somehow Sean Ryan got up. We'll talk more about him momentarily as well, but thankfully he was okay and able to finish that game. They actually got some injury luck on that one, but that looked ugly. But I'm assuming that was the play where he suffered the knee injury, but he continues to practice in a limited basis. But Josh Jacobs, the other one here, I should say a couple other ones. Josh Jacobs, the fact that he's practicing is probably a pretty good sign for him. Remember, he really didn't practice much last week. I didn't think he practiced at all last week. And then Evan Williams returned to practice as well, which is hopefully a good sign for him. Full participants were Romeo Doubs, Aaron Mosby, Colin Oliver, LVN, Christian Watson, Dontavian Wicks, and Savion Williams. You would assume that all of those players are good to go. 20 players in total on the injury or illness report in this case. Hopefully, though, Green Bay gets a lot of these players back. I would say the ones that are true sort of questionable players right now, if as long as Bo Melton and Malik Willis get back from their illness on time, Zach Tom, Christian Welch, Jordan Love would seem to be the three that really truly are sort of questionable at this point in time that I think you have to kind of keep an eye on for the rest of this week. If anything else changes, maybe we get an update again on Thursday with some, you know, injury, hopefully improvements, or maybe some, players who regress a little bit as well. But those would seem to be the ones to keep an eye on right now. And of course, the quarterback position, all eyes on that. There is one other key takeaway from the practice report / injury report. In the locker room after practice, I forget which receiver it was. I think it was maybe, I don't know if it was Watson or who it was, but they were asked, did Clayton Thune take any reps with the first team? And the answer was no. That should tell you a ton. If Green Bay had any real feel that they were concerned that either Jordan Love or Malik Willis would be unable to play, I guarantee you that they would be feeling like we've got to get reps for Clayton Thune. So they clearly believe that they're at least one of the two, but you know, probably or maybe even both are going to be able to play in this game, or you don't go into Wednesday's practice without Clayton Thune getting a couple first team reps, even if it's just a few. So the fact that he didn't take any, that was not on his plate at all, would tell you that they feel pretty good that one of those quarterbacks, if not both, are going to be able to play this week. Just my read on it. You know, choose your own adventure on what you want to read into it, but I would say that that's a very, very good sign that at least one of them, meaning Willis or Love, are going to be able to play in this game. All right, let's get to our film review for this one. Let's start with the Keyshawn Nixon play. Which one, you might ask? All right, let's talk about the Keyshawn Nixon play at the end of regulation, the one that ties the game and gets it into overtime. All right, so I watched this play over and over and over. We talked about it with Justice Mosqueda as well. If you missed the conversation with Justice, long story short, when you're in off coverage and in man-to-man coverage, and you've got two wide receivers, sorry, I hit my microphone there. When you get two wide receivers that are stacked or kind of right next to each other, you do what's called the banjo, or you call banjo, and you're going to, if they switch post-snap, you're going to make that switch. We talked about that at length. I've talked about it earlier this week as well. And that's because you don't want to give them any inherent advantage on that. So we know that the inside player in this case was initially Hobbs's player. All right. And the outside player was initially Nixon's player. If there's no switch, outside is Nixon with the outside receiver, and inside is Hobbs with the inside wide receiver. Now they're stacked almost on top of each other with just one player slightly to the left. Okay. So the left player who ends up running the post is initially going to be Hobbs, and the outside player just lined up a little bit to the right is initially going to be Nixon. We know that post snap, they cross, right? The player who runs the corner out is on the inside. And but they're going to cross, and then the player on the outside is going to run that little slant on the inside. We talked about this again earlier this week, which would mean that in that situation, that Nixon should go with the corner and Hobbs should play the slant. Hobbs does play the slant. Nixon doesn't go with the corner, and the rest was history. I do want to give Chicago some credit here. And this is my interpretation. I'm going to post a video of this on Twitter on Christmas, on Thursday, as we're listening to this, if I get a chance to. So with video, how Chicago ran this play is they've got the two guys stacked, and it's a really long time where if you look at it, they're both going up at the same rate and they're both staying on the sort of same vertical plane. And so really almost up until the corner gets, you know, starts to actually run the corner out, the player on the right would still be Nixon. The player on the left would still be Hobbs. And then if you notice, go back and watch the play. It's not a true slant. It's sort of a stutter and slant, or a stutter and an in, however you want to view it. But the player on the outside runs that stutter and in. And meanwhile, again, the inside player runs the corner. And they break that as late as possible to cause confusion between Hobbs and Nixon on this play. And I missed the biggest part of this. I've mentioned in the past where they need to communicate better. On the all 22, you can see Nixon call it out that they're going to cross and that they're like, he does the signal. He does the signal. He clearly sees the stack and he signals to Hobbs on what they're going to do. The communication is there. All right. So if you remember, we talked about that little stutter and then slant, right? If you're familiar with a lot of these plays, you run a little stutter and then you kind of fake an in and then you cut back to the outside. I'm fairly certain and fairly positive that Keyshawn read this as his guy on the outside, who again, all of this time, up until that little stutter and up until they're going to do the stutter and they're going to do the corner at almost the identical time. And remember, they're in the same plane. They're in the same plane. So at this point in time, up until that corner goes and that slant eventually gets run, up until that time, Nixon is still responsible for the outside guy and Hobbs is still responsible for the inside. Hobbs, so that stutter, I think Nixon expects him to do the stutter, the little fake to the inside and then cut back to the outside. It's a very popular route, the little kind of like zigzag route, or a little like kind of stutter and then you kind of fake inside and then go outside, however you want to view it. And I think he anticipates that that player is going to stutter, fake in, and then come back out. And maybe there was something on tape that he has seen from Chicago previously that they've done something like this. And he starts to jump that route as if he's going to run an out instead of a slant or an in. And at that point, if he anticipates that to be an out or anything to the outside, that's his guy. It's not the corner. So the Bears wide receiver and doing that stutter and then kind of cutting in, Nixon's, I think, expecting him to zag back, and he never does. And he never does, which means that player goes inside, which means that it does become Hobbs's guy. And now that corner route, because Nixon thought, and sort of understandably so, or at least he probably over-anticipated and didn't read his keys, and he's thinking, this guy's going to go to the outside, and he jumps it, and now all of a sudden, he stays inside, and that's why you see Nixon in complete no man's land. That's my read on it, and if you go and watch it, you can see exactly this happen. And again, credit to Chicago for making that break point where that decision has to be made so late in the play. Because it's if the inside guy, or sorry, the outside guy just runs a slant right away, it's a really easy communication and it's a really easy ability for Nixon to get out to that corner. And I guarantee you they both read it perfectly. But that little stutter, and just as he's stuttering and you don't know kind of which way he's going to go, the inside guy goes to the corner. And Nixon reads that stutter as if it's going to be a stutter and then an out route, which would make that his guy, abandoning the corner, which would make Hobbs the corner. So he jumps that outside route And then he runs an inside route and Nixon is toast. Nixon is absolute toast. So they did communicate it pre-snap. They really, really did. And they, and Hobbs had it right. He read that it was going to be a slant. I mean, and the interesting thing here is like how this is drawn up, and this is just really good stuff. And this is not, I'm sure, probably anything entirely new, but how this is executed by Chicago and drawn up by Ben Johnson is they're probably going to get somebody wrong almost no matter what with that stutter. Because I think Hobbs with that stutter anticipated that it was, he was going to come his way. He was going to run the stutter and the slant. And maybe the receiver on the stutter has a two-way option. I don't even know if he's reading anything on that play, but he's that stutter, he's setting it up. Hobbs thinks that that stutter is coming inside. And so he stays inside. And Nixon's thinking that stutter is going to go outside. So he goes outside. And meanwhile, nobody picks up the post play no matter what. Now that's ultimately on Nixon. And I think where it ultimately crumbles is that Nixon anticipates the out route. He doesn't see it. And that's where he has to continue to fall back as if that other receiver and corner could be his. And he doesn't. He starts to come up and then he's toast. And the whole play is messed up. So that is the difference. It's a beautifully drawn up and executed play by Chicago. It really, really is. It's an unbelievable throw by Caleb Williams. It's an unbelievable call by Jeff Hafley. You get a free rusher, Brenton Cox, to get to Caleb almost instantaneously. And Caleb sees it, reads it. The receiver gets both feet down in bounds. And the way that they set that up made it almost an impossible, not impossible, but it made it it's a much more difficult read and in a way, an understandable diagnosis by Nixon, even if it's ultimately still his fault. So yeah, it's a very convoluted and complicated way to saying, yes, it was Nixon's screw up, but this is why there's so much nuance to football. And it's just, yeah, Nixon looks just completely toasted on that play, right? And it technically, yes, it's his fault. I give him a really bad grade on that play still, despite all of what I just talked about, because he ultimately did jump it. But what I talk about all the time is, I want to see your process. I want to be able to look into your mind and in your eyes and see what was the process for that play. And man, Nixon knows. Here's the other thing that's not even on top of this. Nixon knows that they're bringing the heavy pressure. So ball's got to be out quick. So he's thinking there's going to be that quick out route and he's going to jump that thing. He's going to jump that thing. And he's thinking probably pick six in his mind. He's probably thinking, I'm gonna jump this route and I'm going the distance. I can see his process. Ball's gonna have to come out quick. There's a little stutter in the very common again route is that little stutter fake in, cut back out. Welker and Edelman and all those guys ran it so freaking well. And he's gonna jump that and take it, and the game's gonna be over. And all of a sudden he goes to jump it and then realizes they ran the inside and he's just in no man's land and he's completely screwed. And I can only imagine that he was looking back, hoping like when Evan Williams screwed up, that when Keyshawn was there, right? Keyshawn saved the game last. It's such an unbelievable juxtaposition because Keyshawn saved the game when Evan Williams screwed up his assignment. And Evan's like, yeah, I turned back and I was hoping that someone was there. And Keyshawn Nixon fell off of his man on DJ Moore and went and covered Komet and picked off the pass and won the game for Green Bay. And in this case, I can only imagine Keyshawn was looking back, hoping like hell, either that was going to go out of bounds or he wasn't going to foot in or he was going to Yancey Thigpen drop it or that there was going to be Nate Hobbs somehow covered for him in some way. And he looks back and it's a touchdown and it's a tie game. I can understand the process, even if he got it wrong. It's a bad play. It's not probably the right decision in that moment for him to try to jump that play, but it is what it is. Hell of a play by Chicago all the way around. Play call, execution by the receivers, and just unbelievable throw by Caleb Williams. Pains me to say that about the Chicago Bears, but tip your cap to them as well. Sorry, I didn't mean to spend quite as much time on that particular play, but it's a really interesting and fun one to break down. We'll be right back.
Hey friends, today's show is brought to you by Prize Picks. It's the holiday season, the best time of the year for sports, because right now we have bowl games, marquee basketball matchups, playoff pushes, and it's all happening right now, all at once. And while you and I are out making decisions every single day, like which gifts to buy, what to get for dinner, which game to watch, there's only one place where it feels good to be right, and that's Prize Picks. And I love how simple Prize Picks is to use, and more importantly, how fun it is to play. This football season's been even more fun with Prize Picks, and getting my picks in for each slate of games has been a super fun part of my football experience. Oh, and guess what? Prize Picks has a brand new feature, early payouts. If your lineup gets off to a hot start, you may now have the option to cash out those winnings before the game even finishes. So join the millions of users and sign up for America's number one fantasy sports app. This week, I'm going with Jaden Reed to put on a show against Baltimore as Green Bay tries to clinch a playoff berth. I'm also looking for big games from Ashton Jeanty, Matthew Stafford, and Bijan Robinson. Now it's time for you to get in on the action as well. Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. All right, so quick question for everyone. What's better, giving the perfect gift, getting the perfect gift, or making that perfect holiday meal for everyone when you're hosting a big holiday dinner? I go back and forth, but my true answer is giving the perfect gift. Well, the best part is that with Omaha Steaks, you can give the perfect gift, you can add it to the top of your wish list this holiday season, and you can order up some delicious Omaha Steaks to cook your family and friends for your big holiday dinner. It's a win-win all the way around. Now, I love how convenient it is to order Omaha Steaks and how much people love receiving them as gifts. I recently gave some steaks as a gift to a family member, and they were beyond overjoyed. It was a pretty cool moment. Also cooked up some Omaha Steaks, and that was a pretty cool moment as well because they were absolutely delicious. And right now, it's the perfect time to save on delicious gifts and holiday hosting favorites. Surprise your friends or family members with the gift of grass-fed, grain-finished beef from a family-owned company with over 100 years of expertise in the meat industry. So save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com, and for an extra $35 off, use code PACKADAY at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com. Using promo code PACKADAY. All right, Jeff Hafley, I thought was phenomenal in this game. I thought it's so funny too because I really do my best to avoid the any PFF grades or anything like that until I'm done with my grading. But Jacob Morley, of course, of the PACKADAY podcast, always posts out the top five and bottom five PFF grades. And I was just scrolling Twitter and happened to see that I think the top PFF grade was Brenton Cox with like a 70 something. And I'm like, dude, they were like, they allowed 9 points, you know, up until only 2 minutes left. I'm like, there's no way that the best player in this game had like a 70 something grade. Like, there's just no way. And PFF and I were pretty in lockstep. There weren't many good grades on defense. This was a Jeff Hafley masterpiece where he had everyone where he wanted all at once, almost throughout the game, called a really, really gorgeous game. And I just didn't think the execution was that great. You see the pressures on Caleb. Wasn't really guys winning up front. It was, you know, half kind of scheming up some stuff. I thought the coverage on the back end, he knew exactly what to call. A couple things here or there that could have gone different. But to me, this was really well done by Jeff Hafley. Also thought this is the best offensive line performance of the year. If you're looking for a positive takeaway from this game, even without Zach Tom, I thought this was by far and away the best offensive line performance of the year. Now, the Bears defensive line is hot garbage. It's really bad. So take that with whatever grain of salt that you want. The Bears are going to be screwed because of that defensive line. Green Bay might be too, by the way, but because of their defensive line. But I thought this overall still, this was the best the offensive line played. No starting offensive lineman graded in the negative, which is by far and away the first time that that's happened this year. I have to double check it, but I can almost say with a level of certainty that that has not happened yet. And so a really nice performance from the offensive line, hopefully a sign of things to come that should get even better once Zach Tom returns. Dusty pointed this out when we talked earlier this week, that there were a ton of open players all throughout the course of this game. Yeah, there were, and especially Jaden Reed. Jaden Reed was open all day. It was remarkable how many times, and some of the times it was just that pressure got there and they weren't able to find him in some of the longer developing plays. Other times it was just, quarterback didn't see it or quarterback threw elsewhere. There's also the play to Christian Watson where he's wide open for a would-be touchdown, but Willis hits Musgrave instead. Just some plays like that, but there were players open down the field quite a bit in this game, and
unfortunately, just didn't always work out the way that you would have liked it to, and except for the Dobbs touchdown, of course. And then I'll just say this too. I thought the front four, which we'll talk about some of these grades momentarily, defensively was a big problem. Defensive tackles really did nothing. Edge rushers did not do much. I know they were keeping a little bit more contained on Caleb, which they did at times. There was a couple plays really early. Valentine came on a blitz and he's got to keep contained there and he doesn't. Brenton Cox gets caught inside on one play. There's a couple different plays where it's like they clearly spent so much time on making sure Caleb doesn't escape the pocket and guys get sucked inside. And then all of a sudden there's a running lane to the outside. A few different times that happened, which was very frustrating. But the front four, especially against a very good Bears offensive line, was really outmatched in this game. And it made it really difficult, which is, again, why I thought Jeff Hafley did an even better job than it may have even looked, you know, with how he was able to find pressures without guys really winning up front much at all. All right, let's get into the grades. I mentioned a really highly graded offensive lineman, Sean Ryan, despite that pretty early knee roll up, plus 1.55 grade. He was fantastic in this game. He was also PFF's highest graded offensive player in this one as well. I had him a little bit even higher. This would be the game to me where I look at him like, we really need to consider if Sean Ryan should be getting an extension, because he looks natural at center already. And I really like his ability to get to the second level. He looks confident and comfortable there. There's been really no issues with calls or checks at the line or anything like that. There is the snap at the end with him and Malik Willis, but man, I've watched that a few different times. That to me is more on Malik Willis. There's really nothing that it seemed like Sean Ryan did wrong on that play. So I thought overall Ryan was phenomenal. Run blocking, pass protection, you name it. Now, Andrew Billings is not very good on the inside. Grady Jarrett's pretty washed up, et cetera. We can have that conversation, but I thought this was a fantastic performance from Sean Ryan. Romeo Dobbs, I will note, this is just for offense. That special teams grade would be pretty bad from that one, you know, actually two plays, the one where he had the punt return and had all the space and didn't do anything with it, but clearly the bigger one, the onside kick recovery. So those are not factored into this. Plus 1.00 grade, had a really nice day on offense and was clearly one of the biggest factors why Green Bay had the lead, had the big touchdown catch, had the fingertip catch along the sidelines. I think he had like a slant play too that went for some decent yardage. Just some really, really good stuff from Romeo all throughout this game. Was their best and leading playmaker, deserving of a good grade on offense. Unfortunately, his special teams grade may have completely cost them the game, but we do not grade special teams, so he gets let off the hook for that particular, grade, if you will. Number three, Rashid Walker. Hell yeah. Rashid Walker, plus 0.35. I will once again say the caveat, bad Bears pass rush, but I thought this is one of the better Rashid games of the season. Hopefully another sign of things to come. Really like the way that he blocked a couple plays here and there that you would certainly like back. But I thought as a pass protector, his footwork and hands were much better. I thought he got a good wide base throughout the course of the game. And overall just kind of kept his defensive ends at bay. Run blocking, you know, mostly good. I thought there were a couple of plays where he maybe could have been a little bit more physical, try to get a little bit more traction, but overall nothing egregious. So real solid, nice day for Rashid Walker overall. Bottom three on offense, only three players graded in the negative, which is a good sign. One of them barely so. Josh Jacobs, negative 1.15, his worst day as a Green Bay Packer. Injuries, I'm sure, played a part. The fumble was the big one. Can't take points off the board in the red zone, and he gets that ball stripped away. Was his, you know, forward progress stopped? Yeah, probably. Could they have blown the whistle there? Yeah, probably. But they didn't. And either way, you've got to hold on to that football. He did not. And that's a massive game-changing play. Also, just a couple plays where I thought he didn't read the play correctly and had opportunities to get better yardage and just didn't. Injuries definitely playing a part there. Josh Jacobs has still been really good on the season, but this was a rough one for him. And if Josh Jacobs just plays his normal game, Green Bay wins this game probably pretty easily. Darian Kennard, negative 0.6. Probably time to have a conversation. I really like the six offensive line sets. Darian Kennard's been pretty bad at it as of late. I don't know if there's another player that maybe makes more sense, but I think you need to reevaluate that a little bit because it's been a bit of a struggle for him. He only had, I think, like 10, something like that. Maybe it was a little bit more, maybe it was a little bit less, but somewhere around there, snaps in this game and still had one of the lowest grades of anybody on the team. Matthew Golden, negative 0.1. I thought there was the end around where he should have cut it in and stayed outside, which was not great. A couple blocking plays here and there. And then just didn't really, you know, wasn't able to get open too much on you know, the receiving routes that he was a part of. So nothing major here for Golden. Negative 0.1 is basically a neutral grade, but just a very slight negative for him. The good news, again, the only three players that graded in the negative were Jacobs, Kennard, and Golden on offense. Noteworthy on offense, Jordan Love, neutral grade, 0.00. Thought there was some stuff he did good early, including scrambling for a first down. Thought he missed a couple throws. Thought he had some options where he maybe just didn't hit. But also made some good throws, and then, of course, just went over early. So ended up as a neutral grade for Jordan. Malik Willis, plus 0.2, would have had a pretty solid positive grade had it not been for the fumble at the end. Yes, I did put that one on Malik. If for some reason you don't, well, then bump his grade up, and that's fine. But to me, that fumble's on him. He's got to secure that ball. And I do think if he gets it to Melton on the end around there, that Melton does pick up the first down. But, you know, we'll never know. Emmanuel Wilson. Might surprise that Wilson only had a neutral grade in this one with how well he did running the football. I thought a lot of, and this is where the offensive line grades come in, where they had a better day. I thought a lot of his yardage was blocked for him, meaning he got the yards that were there from the offensive line. He also had the play that went off his face mask that was a negative play in the red zone. Also missed a couple blocks, one in pass pro, one on an end around. So there were some negatives there for Wilson that kind of countered some of the positives. And again, a lot of his rushing yards were, I thought, blocked for him. Jaden Reed, plus 0.3, solid day for Jaden. And the big thing is, again, he was open a ton throughout the day. If quarterbacks could have got it to him, he could have easily had a day over 100-plus yards receiving. Just didn't happen that way. Anthony Belton was a roller coaster in this game. Some really, really good stuff from Belton that has me pretty freaking excited of how he's playing already at right guard. Also some really bad stuff and some stuff where, especially in pass pro, he's just going to have to get a little bit more consistent. You can also tell you got a couple big-time behemoth fights with Andrew Billings, and you can tell that the way that Belton has been able to play throughout his career is like, if he just gets into you, he's going to overwhelm you. He's 30, 40 pounds, whatever it is, 6'5". He's just a mauler, right? Well, in the NFL, you get up against guys that are also 330, 340, and you can't just win with strength. You got to use a little bit more technique. I think that'll come with time with Belton, but still some really positive things that were on tape in this one for him.
We'll be right back.
Jordan Morgan, had it not been for that pretty brutal play right before the end of the regulation where he allows a sack and just gets completely bowled over and bull rushed into oblivion, he would have had a really positive grade. But a plus 0.05 still, even with that play in consideration, not the biggest mauling right tackle in the world, but I thought he held up pretty well. And then in very much like Dusty, Mike Wall, and Justice said earlier this week, started shaky, then really settled into the game and played really well, then had that big sack at the end of regulation that brought his grade back down, and it ends up kind of neutraling out. But there was stuff in the middle of the game that looked really good. He's so much better as a tackle. I mean, just ridiculously better. And that should give some hope moving forward. If he is a left tackle next year for Green Bay, his more natural position, that maybe he can actually settle in there. Once again, the caveat, Bears defensive line really bad. But that was, I thought, overall a good sign for Jordan Morgan. And last but not least, just Aaron Banks, plus 0.2. Some ups and downs, very kind of reminiscent of what we've kind of seen from Banks this year, but still ended up as a net positive there. So every offensive lineman, again, save for Darian Kennard, who was playing as a sixth offensive lineman, graded in the positive. Top three on defense, like I said, there weren't many really high grades. I had Javon Bullard as the highest, plus 0.35. Xavier McKinney is the second, plus 0.3. Wish he could have came up with that interception. And Nate Hobbs, plus 0.25. I thought all three of these players rallied well to the football, covered pretty well throughout the day. Hobbs did have one where he allowed like a deep in route over the middle, was clearly involved in that play with Keyshawn Nixon, like we talked about at the beginning. But overall, these last 2 weeks have been much better for Nate Hobbs. And many of you have pointed out, and correctly so, that's because he's playing in the slot. It's just like Jordan Morgan playing tackle instead of guard. Hey, look, he's playing his natural position and he looks better. Nate Hobbs, oh, look, he's playing his natural position, which is in the slot, and he looks better. There you go. And I don't know how to remedy that moving forward, to be honest. Javon Bullard was a higher graded player than Hobbs, and he's going to be patrolling the slot. You're not taking Evan Williams or Xavier McKinney off the field. So Williams and McKinney are going to be your safeties. And unless you're in dime, you don't have two slot players. So you have to decide between Bullard, who's playing great, and Hobbs, where that's his natural position, which it makes it difficult. makes it really difficult. It's a good, you know, depth problem to have with all those, you know, three guys who can play safety really well and two guys who can play in the slot pretty damn well, but you just don't have that many positions. So you're gonna have to figure that out long term. But I thought Hobbs looked much more natural once again in that slot position. And again, Bullard was all over the place. McKinney, again, outside of dropping the interception, had another solid performance as well. So those are your top three. Bottom three, Keyshawn Nixon, negative 1.6. Just a rough day. We talked about the play at the end of regulation. And then, of course, in overtime, gives up the huge play as well. It's a heck of a throw and play by DJ Moore and Caleb Williams. But he ultimately gives up the game-tying touchdown. He ultimately gives up the game-winning touchdown. And even without those two plays, would have been in the negative. Either way, one of the lowest graded performances of the year, a tough one for Keyshawn. Again, I can see his process on that first play. If you look at the second play, you know, he's sprinting right there. But DJ Moore just beats him with pure speed. You know, Nixon kind of did what he could, but Moore just beat him. Moore just beat him to the spot and went up and got the ball, and the rest was history. But yeah, he ends up with a really rough day overall. We've talked a lot about some of the players who are maybe having good seasons, bad seasons, etc. Probably haven't talked enough about Carl Brooks. Carl Brooks is struggling quite a bit right now. And I think it's time for a conversation as to whether or not he should be getting as many snaps as he is. He hasn't really done much. He's really a problem in run defense right now. The Bears picked on him. If Carl Brooks was on the field, they doubled him. And he was just basically immediately out of his gap. It was just a double team right up on Brooks. He couldn't hold up with it. He's out of his gap and you're picking up 5-6 yards. So they really are going to need to reevaluate that. Now, is Warren Brinson or Jordan Riley going to be better? I don't know. My answer is probably yeah. I think they might be. Maybe you try Bohanna. I don't know. But Brooks is a pass rushing defensive tackle who's asked to play like full-time right now, which I don't think is good for him. And not only that, he hasn't brought much value as a pass rusher. So I think they're going to have to reevaluate that a little bit. Negative 0.8 for Brooks, and he's had a rough go of it. And then negative 0.55 for Enagbare. I thought he had a tough time getting off of blocks. A couple of plays in run defense where, again, he couldn't get off and couldn't go make a play. And then just getting to the quarterback didn't really have that impact. Was containing at times, I understand that, but when he was tasked with trying to get to the QB, he struggled to get there. So he was at negative 0.55. Some noteworthy performances on defense. Jordan Riley plus 0.05. Some really good stuff on tape from Riley. Couple plays where he kind of got washed out of the play a little bit, but some plays where he, you know, did a textbook example of a stack and shed and reset the line of scrimmage on one occasion. Like just some solid all around play from Riley. If he can find that consistency, they're going to really have something there. But even just what he showed in this game, he's already a pretty sound rotational defensive tackle. Probably is ideally like your fourth or fifth defensive tackle, which is where he's at right now. But even still, that's a pretty solid find off of the Giants practice squad, I think it was, just a couple weeks ago. Rashawn Gary, negative 0.2. Early on, I thought he played actually okay. I know there was the play where he's jogging early or whatever, but had a couple pressures, had a good run defense early, but as the game went on, it just continued to not have much of an impact, and it ultimately ended up with a negative 0.2. LVN, negative 0.3, just doesn't quite look himself yet with that foot injury. What I will say is I thought he looked better on the interior than on the exterior, meaning defensive tackle over defensive end. If I were Green Bay, I might focus on using him as a situational, you know, three technique in obvious passing situations right now. It seems to be maybe where he can help the team the most. And then Edgerrin Cooper with his lowest grade of the year, negative 0.5. Thought there was some alignment issues that he had, some assignment issues. There's one play where he gets a free blitz. So, oh, it's a frustrating play. But I think he throws it away anyway, so I don't think it mattered all that much. I could be wrong, though. But he's supposed to, they're basically running a two linebacker twist or stunt, whatever you want to call it, where he's going to pick Quay Walker's guy, and Quay Walker's going to come around and get the free rush. Well, nobody blocks Edgerrin Cooper. So he's like a free rusher. And instead of just going right and beelining to the quarterback, he continues with his assignment and like turns to go from having a free blitz on Caleb Williams to turn and go block Quay Walker's guy. I'm like, what are you doing? You've got a free, they let you go to the quarterback. Don't stop. No matter what you do, do not stop. So yeah, that was a weird one. He struggled to get off of blocks as a linebacker. Some of those offensive linemen for the Bears who were really good got to the second level, knocked him off his spot. So this was a hang with him a little bit with Adrian Cooper and negative 0.5 grade for him in this one. Just to kind of recap it, top three on offense, Sean Ryan, Romeo Doubs, and Rashid Walker. Bottom three, Josh Jacobs, Darian Kennard, and Matthew Golden. Top three on defense, Javon Bullard, Xavier McKinney, and Nate Hobbs. Bottom three on defense, Keyshawn Nixon, Carl Brooks, and Kingsley Enagbare. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for being here. I know I went over that Keyshawn play at length, but it's a fun one to discuss. Like I said, I'll try to get a video of that up on Twitter on Thursday if I can. Hope you all, again, have a very safe and happy holiday. I appreciate you guys so much. Thanks for joining me today on this Christmas Day episode of the Pack-A-Day podcast. I will see you all very soon. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Alex Huang, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Willie Winklestinkle, The Gable Storm, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weish, Craig, John D. Metropolis, Ada Radomski, Devin Lane, Alexander Newell, Bill Reinhart, Richard Morales, Les Nino, Beast Bumblebee, Benjamin Sargent, Christian Bradley, Steve Bates, John Mark Liddell, Nemo, and Jake Conner. See you tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.